All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Coming up in about a half hour, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, going to join us. Want to get his perspective on the trade of Deontay Johnson yesterday to the Baltimore Ravens. Does that move the needle for the Ravens? Already a very good offense. I think everybody recognizes that. But their defense is their bigger concern. How does that impact the potential number one seed conversation? And, of course, want to get Ross's thoughts on how DeAndre Hopkins already integrated himself in one game with this Chiefs offense before they get set to take on the Bucs on Monday night. So it'll be good to have Ross join us. And a little bit later on today on the show, Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated going to join us at 12:30, get more perspective on the NFL as a whole from a trade deadline angle as well. So that's coming up a little bit later on. But what's going on? Good morning. Good morning to you. How you feeling? You good?
Fine.
You got the quarter zip on. It's going to be warm, and then all of a sudden it's going to drop.
This is full zip.
I guess it is a full zip, but you don't have it fully zipped, thank goodness.
Why?
I'd be very concerned if you came in and it was just.
I will say I've been accused of zipping my hoodies too high up.
Really,
I don't like a hoodie. Maybe I should loosen one less button on a dress shirt.
Yeah,
and I'll be honest.
Yeah,
I don't want it up too high.
Yeah,
but I like it maybe a little higher than most. This too low. Right up there, right below the neck, you know?
You can watch this all play out on video you want.
You know, by the way, if you wanted to see me unzip and zip a jacket up, great news. Mm-hmm. That's available at the Fan 96.5 right here on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. Alex will do his pants zipper preferences next. So, I mean, subscribe, review, rate.
That's usually
all of those things.
I think that's what they do on After Hours now that Dusty's not on that show and he's in mornings. I think that's what Mac and Drew do during After Hours, right?
What?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
He said pretty much a yes.
That was a yes. I think that was a yes. Yeah. Is that tonight? Are you hosting that tonight? Or are you hosting
not tonight? It's
who's
been,
on after
it?
Me? I'm on. I got betting show tonight, 6 to 7. And who's on after me? Is it you?
I believe it's Bink.
Okay.
Jay Binkley.
Today.
DJ Binkley.
Put in a lie.
Ty turnaround tomorrow.
Yeah, he's doing tonight and he's filling in for you tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right. I will be doing after hours. Okay. After hours only.
All right. Just was curious. Thinking
will
of
you
Dusty.
Be in Halloween costume? Too late. Lost him.
Yeah.
I thought about that, but it's too late.
I don't know if anybody from the station dressed up for our company Halloween party.
It's the day before Halloween. The vibes are weird. I don't know.
I showed up and I thought, I was like, crap, I didn't wear the Joe Burrow jersey. And then I got out. 10 of us got here at the same time and nobody else was wearing a costume. I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just me.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I want to point out one thing. We mentioned there's a whiteboard in here. There's two, actually. There's a whiteboard that still has our weight loss challenge thing,
which we
need to erase. It's sat like in the corner with that for 2.5 years or 2 years. There's also another one that has like a phone number for the station. And it also has week 1, 2, all the way through week 8 of the Chiefs schedule. And I think Dusty is who has written that down. And at one point we made the comment, we were joking, like, hey, we can just pull it up on our computer.
But then I can't see it.
And Cody can't see it. But you know what? As we were looking at it yesterday, I'll give Dusty credit for this. We're like, you know what? Let's take a look at the scores for a second. And maybe you haven't realized it, but since week 4, the Chiefs have won every single game by either a touchdown or more. That it doesn't feel that way, but 17-10 against the Chargers, 26-13 against the Saints, 28-18 against the Niners, and then of course against the Raiders, 27-20 with the garbage time touchdown. It would have been even more. So this team is winning by more than we think.
I think that what stands out about that, and what I think we've been missing in this is, the national narrative has been very clear. The national narrative has been, the Chiefs don't win by a lot. Can't blow any teams away. This will eventually come to an end. They're winning by an average of 9.25 points over the last 4 weeks, and that includes a garbage time touchdown against the Raiders. So two of their last 4 games, they've won by double digits. You and I both agree. That's a massive win by NFL standards. So 2 of the last 4 wins are by double digits. 3 of the last 4 easily could have been by double digits. And they went 17 consecutive points against the Chargers and never allowed a single other point in that game against them. They're winning by more than you think. The close, oh God, they almost lost. Your brain has tricked you into that because they won by a toe against the Baltimore Ravens. And then they had to get a 4th-down stop to finish the game against Atlanta, and against Cincinnati, they were trailing and they needed a pass interference call late in the 4th quarter. So you thought of those first 3 games and you're like, Oh my God, it's Razor's Edge. They're winning by a thimble. They could have easily been 0-3 is what you're telling yourself in the head. The last three weeks, they have not trailed in a single one of the games in the last 4 weeks in the fourth quarter. They have not trailed in the second half of any of those games. They have won two of those games by double digits. The Chiefs are getting better. You just didn't notice it because you're still remembering how close they were playing in those games earlier this year.
And they have something else, top 10 offense, points per game in football. They're up to ninth in the NFL. So that's another sign. They're able to do this in large part because of the defense. Sure, we've discussed historical implications yesterday of where this defense is at and what they're doing. But all of a sudden to have the offense back in the top 10, you know why they're back in the top 10. The last 2 weeks, they've been better in the red zone. Like it's really not that complicated sometimes.
They're one of the best efficiency teams for moving the ball.
Sometimes it's not, we don't have to overcomplicate like why a team is succeeding or not, or why suddenly they're playing better football and score more points. They've been better in the red zone. So now they're back. They're in the top 10 on offense. They're beating up teams by NFL standards, winning 28-18 like they did against the 49ers. That's a blowout. But in the NFL,
they had kind of a garbage timey touchdown too.
You win by 10 points in the NFL, that's a blowout. This is not college football. And so even the 27-20, that was a garbage time touchdown. That's a blowout win against the Raiders on the road to win by 7.
If you have two touchdowns with 5 minutes to go, you kick their ass. Or at the very least, you kick their ass in the second half. I don't care what the score is at halftime. And again, they didn't trail in the fourth quarter in a single one of those games. Hell, they didn't trail in the fourth quarter in the Falcons game either. So if you want me to go, they have 5 straight games.
And that was a 5-point win.
5 straight games that at no point in the fourth quarter were they trailing in the football game. And they won, again, the last 4 by an average of almost 10 points per game. If you told me, Gold, that the Chiefs were going to win their games this year on average by 10 points, I'd tell you, yeah, you're fine. Couple that with the stat I gave you yesterday, which is there's more one-possession games the first 8 weeks of this NFL season than at any other point in, like, the post-Super Bowl era, well, then I think you're probably getting a sense of this is the nature of the NFL. By what the NFL's asking you to do this year, the Chiefs are dominating. I think it's hard because people want to go back to that Patriots team that went undefeated, and they're already trying to equate it to that, even though nobody on this show is predicting the Chiefs will go undefeated at this stage. It's certainly something we can discuss in a couple of weeks if they get through this week against Tampa Bay, next week against Denver, and the week after that against Buffalo. That's a difficult enough stretch that if they get through that we'll probably have a different conversation. But that, like, they need to win every game 40-10, like they're Ohio State. That's not how this works.
I think we've said it a few times. I think it's the college football thing. It's also fantasy football. It's also, people are looking at their bets and things like that to impact how they view if a team actually won by a lot, if a team is covering the spread or not. That was a situation a year ago. The Chiefs are actually, other than this week against the Raiders, where they didn't cover the 9 points or whatever it was heading into the game, that's where some people base it off of. Like, oh, you're winning, but you're not covering, so you're not winning by enough. They won by 7 points. They didn't cover, for those of you that backed the Chiefs, so you view it as they didn't win by enough. You know, whereas in the Niners game, they were 1-point dogs, right? 1.5-point underdogs. They win by 10.
So they covered it by a lot.
But by a lot, yeah. So, no, the Chiefs, if anything, over the last couple weeks have been winning by a wider margin than we had seen even last year. Last year, so much of it has been the same. Yes, great defense, quote-unquote struggling offense. But that actually has not been a stretch of games here where they have performed at the same level as a year ago, but we've kind of trained ourselves to think that they're playing exactly the same way. There's some elements that they're the same, but winning wise, I'd have to go back and look at weeks 4 through 8 in particular last year. But I don't believe they had a stretch in of games last year at any point, maybe, Cody, for a 4 stretch.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Were they won by 7 or more? Like, did they have a 4-game stretch last year in the regular season when they were winning by 7 or more in 4 straight?
It would have had to be early because they beat the Bears by 30 or whatever it was.
Sure.
It would have had to have been that stretch where they did that.
God, but I still feel like there must have been a close game somewhere in there.
So last year,
they lost games, and they lost. They were only 11-6 last year. Their standards, pretty low.
The last week of the season, I don't necessarily factor that one as much. But if you go back to 2023, they ended the season against the Chargers with a 1-point win, but that was backups, so let's not count that.
The
one.
The answer is no. They did not have a single stretch last year where they won 4 consecutive games by 7 or more.
Yeah, they.
Matter of fact, they didn't even go that close. The best they did was 2 games.
Yeah, right. They they had, against the Patriots by 10, but then they lost to the Bills the week before. Yeah, so they just didn't have that.
I do think, too, the fact that, as you said, you know, the defense was so good last year and the offense was struggling last year. The fact that the way that they are, that the Chiefs are who they are, the fact that they're winning games by 13 or 14, it's even more of an ass-kicking, I think, if you look at how the defense has been, where the offense, they might only score, you know, 7 points or 7 more points than the Chargers in that win, but the Chargers had no shot at winning that game. Like, the Raiders, as soon as you go up 27-13, there's no that game's over. You know, there's, because the defense is so good where if they get up by 7 points in the second half, you can comfortably and without much, you know, doubt say the game's over because the defense is not letting up a touchdown in the second half. A
lot of like 12 play drives that end in a field goal that make a double digit. So you're like, well, call that a day. It's the third quarter? Okay, good luck. Someone was asking on the text line, do the Chiefs lead the NFL in time of possession this year based on what they've done the last 3 weeks? They're actually third in the NFL in time of possession because that's the other part of what they're doing. Sometimes this whole like points thing or the amount of points or the closeness of the game is the Chiefs are playing games right now with limited possessions for both teams. There are less points available, therefore less points that can be spread apart between the two teams because right now the Chiefs are playing games where both teams possess the ball less than in probably a standard NFL game. Look at the last game. The Chiefs ran a 19-play drive and a 13-play drive and an 11-play drive. There are only so many drives they can have in a game, ergo only so many drives the Raiders can have in this game, and it's leading to this thing. They're just winning by more than you think. Those first two games is what I'm convinced, the first three games, are what have convinced you, like, oh my God, they only play close games. Because again, it was by a toe, a fourth down stop in the fourth quarter against Atlanta, yep, and a pass interference call in the fourth quarter against Cincinnati. So you're like razor's edge. The last four games ain't that. The opposite of that in a lot of cases. Two blowouts, two double-digit wins, an almost third double-digit win, and a team that they handled pretty much from the first quarter on.
The one thing that during the stretch is still happening, and I guess it makes it in a weird way even more impressive, you could say that it has to be fixed by the playoffs, sure, but the fact that it still was the eighth straight game where Mahomes threw a pick, like that's what's wild about what we just discussed about the margin of victory, is that they're still turning the ball over too much, and yet they're 7-0, and they're winning by comfortable margins. We all know one thing that was the same last year is they turned the ball over too much, and then in the game against the Dolphins, wild card weekend, and of course against Buffalo and against the Ravens and again in the Super Bowl against the Niners, what did they not do really? They didn't turn the ball over. And so that if you're asking and why this team can continue to get better and how it's very fair to say they're one of the handful of teams that you can still say are not playing their best football, but yet they're in the playoff picture. The Chiefs are one of the two or three teams maybe that can say that they're not playing their best, and yet they're in a playoff position, and the Chiefs, of course, are the last remaining undefeated team in football, and they're right away easily right away turnovers are the one thing you can point to, right? Like
easiest fix for getting more points. It's 8 straight games with a Mahomes pick. 8. I mean, dude, that's... Look, we come on the show, we're pretty optimistic about this team, no reason not to be. They're 7-0. They won 13 straight games. They're back-to-back Super Bowl champions. I understand all the things that go in their favor. This is nuts. Get this in check. This is too many turnovers. I know every year you can explain away a few. I'll explain away a few on behalf of Patrick Mahomes, right? Like the ones that went off Kadarius Toney's hand last year for a pick. He didn't have anything to do with that. That's cool. I got it. There's always 2, 3, 4. I'd say, hey, man, not on you. It's cool. But like last week's, I still argue is. And you'd be like, but how? He got unlucky. His arm got knocked as he was getting a wrench up. He stood back there for 10 seconds in the back of his own end zone and tried to wrench back a throw to go deep down the field. You just ain't got that kind of time. Know your personnel. Know the trouble your left and right tackles had. I'm just, no offense. In that drive, Wanye Morris had been called for 2 different holding penalties that backed him up. Know the position. Know where you're at. That throw was too risky for that time. That interception is on him, whether his arm got knocked or not. Now, in the previous week, right, one got batted at the line of scrimmage. I don't really, whatever, bad luck. Oops, right? So what? But 8 straight games. you didn't accidentally throw eight straight games with an interception.
Yeah.
And about half of those are multi-interception games. So even if one of those in the game is kind of, they've got to find a way to control that. I think it's them still trying to get, I think this is actually weapons related in fairness. I think some of this is just talent. The man has to throw the ball into tighter windows than he should have to throw the ball into sometimes, or hold onto the ball later. I think this is like the left tackle, the tackle causes problems, the wide receiver stuff, like all of that kind of adds into this.
I think it's more the O-line thing than the throwing into tight windows. If anything, he's acknowledged that he's not trusted himself to throw it into tight windows enough. Like, I actually think that's been the problem at times, is that that's not something that he has been doing all that often. I think if you're saying the biggest reason for some of the interceptions that we've seen this year is that the lack of trust because of the concerns at the left and right tackle position. Although I still think Ruan Taylor was better on Sunday than people give him credit for. I think the left tackle spot, of course, with Wanya Morris is the problem. I think that's probably like where I would put at the top of the list of why we're seeing this. I mean, wasn't it just a week or so ago Mahomes was asked about the red zone issues, but also some of the turnovers post bye week? And he said something along the lines of, you know, not throwing and trusting himself to throw in the tight windows as much as he should. I don't think it's forcing it into tight windows. I don't think he's trusted himself and has done that enough.
Yeah, I think that's probably some of it. I think some of it is probably just getting used to, again, Gold, the deep passing game that didn't exist for a number of other times and all the stuff that will kind of come into that. So some of it is certainly that back into it. But I mean, it's a lot of interceptions in a row. It's an unignorable amount at this point.
Yeah. By the way, Patrick Mahomes will be on the drive this afternoon right here on your home for the Chiefs 96.5 The Fan. So I believe in the 3 o'clock hour today.
So I think obviously, you know, he's throwing those picks there. Is the fact that they're winning the games, I don't know if it's just me, does it seem like the defense is forcing more turnovers where they're making a big-time play, whether it's the fumble recovery for the touchdown against the Bengals, whether it's forcing Purdy to throw all those intercepts? Because I don't know if you would have said last year, hey, Mahomes did not play very well. He threw two picks or whatever it was against the Niners, and they won by 10 points. I don't think last year, if you'd have said that, they would have, because they didn't force turnovers. They were really good last year, obviously, but they didn't force the turnovers like they are this year. I don't know if it's any how much different it is compared to last year, but to me, it seems like the defense is, when Mahomes makes a mistake, they're able to get the ball back in a way by forcing the turnover themselves. It seems like they've been able to do that better this year.
They're middle of the road right now in takeaways per game. They're tied for 16th. 1.1 is per game.
Remember where they were last year?
2023, they were at 1.1, so technically they're actually at the exact same for now.
I don't know if it just seems that way, but
I mean, if obviously this past week's game, they just had a goal line stand, right? Like following the turnover. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it feels like. We all agree the defense is better. But in terms of actual takeaways per game, it averages out to so far the exact same. Now, their last three games, maybe this is what you're talking about, Drew. Last three, it's 1.7 instead of 1.1. And so maybe that's what you're getting. The last three games they have in
like the Purdy picks and then the forced fumbles. I mean, yeah,
Green Bay is the number one in the league. The only AFC team, there's only a couple AFC teams in the playoff picture that I see. Pittsburgh is the top AFC team in takeaways, it looks like, so far this year.
I think, honestly, a huge part of the issue, at least at the moment, is some of those picks that are happening in the line of scrimmage. I think he's had three this year knocked down by defensive linemen, right, that are picked up in the air. Well, why do you think that they're able to put their hands up? They don't have a mid-range jumper. Everything is close to the line of scrimmage. Their average yards per attempt are way down. People can pick on you a little bit in that. The early part of the season, this probably goes back to the thing we were just talking about. The early part of the season, I thought he made a couple throws. You're like, woof, right? Goldweck, where he just threw him to the arms of a linebacker he didn't see underneath. The interceptions don't seem to be coming that way anymore, right? The Cam Taylor Britt one or whatever, that's just a good athletic play. Worthy could have maybe helped him by trying to knock that ball down, but just a good athletic play. So what? I don't feel bad about those. The interceptions you have to avoid are the early season ones where, like, he's just thrown it to a guy he straight up doesn't see or holds onto the ball too long in a decision where he has to handle those things differently. Those are the things I think you want to see improve.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. We'll ask him about the turnovers and also the Chiefs' 7-0 start to the season. But last night, we didn't see the sweep. World Series continues. There will be a game 5 tonight in the Bronx as the Yankees avoided the sweep. They get the win over the Dodgers. But the story out of this one is not only that the series continues, but certainly what occurred early on in the game in right field when Mookie Betts was going for a ball. And here's how it sounded.
Fly to right by Torres. Betts in the corner. Does he have room? Fights with the fan. And they're going to say that it's an out and fan interference. So an out, one gone in this first. It's the second time that Gleyber Torres has hit a ball that has ended up in fan interference in this series. He had the home run turn into a double back at Dodger Stadium. And yeah, Betts has that ball in his glove, and this fan literally tries to take his glove off. Pries the ball out of there. A for effort.
Well, he won't be watching the game much longer.
Wow, he might. Just from a TV. He's going to be watching this on the TV.
So, two fans. One is actually grabbing the glove of Mookie Betts trying to get the baseball out. The other fan is out there grabbing the wrist, trying to keep the wrist away from Mookie Betts, who's trying to get the fan off of his glove. It was one of the wilder things I've ever seen in a baseball game. We all know Bartman and stuff, but
he was ripping it out of his glove.
Bartman just simply reached over and caught a baseball, right? Or tried to catch a baseball. This was a fan literally trying to grab the glove or the baseball from an opposing player. You wonder why over and over throughout this series or in general, I have brought up, you have brought up, why I can't stand East Coast sports fans, why I can't stand the Yankees. That sequence right there is just the perfect prime example, because that guy has no business being back in the ballpark tonight, but I guess they're going to let him back in the ballpark after getting kicked out yesterday. And yet Yankees fans were high-fiving and hugging both of them as they were walking up the concourse. And Yankees fans are saying, oh, they put in more effort than the team. That's their reaction. Not that they're just a bunch of idiots and losers representing Yankees fans. No, that's all of them. That they're proud of what they were able to do. Screw the Yankees. Screw their fans. I was pissed off in the moment. I can't stand that they ended up winning that game last night. No, that's what you're an absolute moron for doing what those two fans did. It's one thing to try to make a catch and you accidentally reach over and there's fan interference. That happens. Like, instincts happen. This wasn't instincts. This was you being an a-hole and trying to grab the glove off of Mookie Betts.
What if, I mean, what's crazy is, and this happens in sports all the time, we run into this because in American sports, you're essentially sitting on top of these players sometimes, right? Like in the NBA, probably even more so. But play, action, happens near the stand sometimes, so these things will come up. I mean, they're like ripping at his arm. What's even more egregious is they're claiming the Yankees are going to let him go to the game tonight. What?
We'll see if they actually end up
in there. Major League Baseball would have to step in that scenario. Do not let fans who tried to physically make contact on purpose, by the way. There's no mystery in this. This is not an oops, I accidentally ran into a player, I yelled, I got it, whatever, right? The things that you would allow a fans to do that could impact a game, they were trying to rip it away. So your thing is like the whole East Coast thing, like this is just the attitude of the people.
Of course, because they were proud of themselves, Cody. They were fans were high-fiving them, and before you're like, well, that's not representative of all Yankees fans. It wasn't just a small group. Like, multiple Yankees fans, whether it was social media, some of my friends that are Yankees, they were all proud. They're like, see, maybe this will fire the team up, or this is the World Series. They're trying to help out the team. That's their attitude about it. So, yeah, just add this to the list of reasons why I can't stand their fans. And then Mookie Betts, I thought, was great in postgame when he was asked about it. Basically, like, I'm not going to give these two clowns any attention.
It's irrelevant. We lost. It doesn't matter.
How is that man feeling? Because it kind of looked like, from our perspective, that your wrist kind of went a little bit back.
No, I didn't even know he grabbed my hand. So, no, it's perfectly fine.
Was that about as aggressive as you've seen fans in all your time in the game?
When it comes to the person in play, it doesn't matter. We lost. It's irrelevant. I'm fine. He's fine. Everything's cool. We lost the game, and that's what I'm kind of focused on. We got to turn the page and get ready for tomorrow.
So I think Mookie Betts handling it the right way. Don't even give them attention. Don't blame anything on them. And I'll give credit to somebody that I do radio with over on the weekends, Grant, because he made the comparison to the NBA, and I thought it was actually a really good comp. And he said how Mookie Betts handled that is so much different. In the NBA, when a fan does something, Russell Westbrook or somebody will be
call him a clown.
We'll stop the game. They will stop the game, and they will point, and they will yell until they drag their ass out of the stadium, and they'll make it the biggest scene ever, and then they'll bitch and moan about it after the game. That's the NBA. Mookie Betts, I just played you the audio of that. It's very, very different. Very different how situations are handled.
Yeah, I would say so. But also, I don't care if they kicked their ass a game. If you're acting
they should be kicked out. I'm just saying, like, the way the players, like, Mookie Betts is not trying to give these guys any more attention. Yeah. Russell Westbrook will be tweeting about it. I keep using Russ. Sorry, Russ. Kevin, pick whoever.
Durant was the one who got into that crazy lady on the sideline last year.
Yeah.
She'd actually been a good example. I understand the problem that comes with this, but, like, just kick him out. Don't let him go to stuff anymore. Yeah. You can't handle yourself like an adult. You're a little crybaby because your team's down 3-0. You start ripping the ball away from Mookie Betts, now 3-1. Well, then you just don't get to go to baseball games anymore. This is a luxury. Right. You don't have to go to this. It's not your job. We're going to save you that. Good news. We're going to save you thousands of dollars. You don't have to go to the Yankees game anymore. Problem solved. They're just infants. Just handle like infants.
In fairness, Russell Westbrook handles it like Moises Alou with Bartman.
Sure.
He threw his gloves. He was so heated. Which
he didn't ask the guy to get kicked out. I mean, he did, but like,
yeah, it was automatic. Those guys were automatically getting kicked out of the game. If it's true that they're allowed back in tonight, to me that's absolutely ridiculous. Insane. The very next night, you can go right back in and do it again?
Yeah, the league has to do something.
That's insane.
Are they allowed in? Theoretically, do they have the same seats? That obviously shouldn't be allowed. Even if they are allowed in the game, it needs to be like nosebleeds.
Someone says, this is just different perspective on it. We appreciate that. 913-586-7965. Someone from the 816 says, I don't think it's a big deal. They called him out. No one was hurt. Had no effect on the play on the field. Good entertainment to me. Well, fortunately, it had no impact. Fortunately, the ump saw it all play out and did call him out.
Yeah.
Imagine if it didn't. Like, is that where we're like the criteria now?
Do we want
fans
to be able to have an impact on the game? Like, even though it didn't this one time, like, would you want Gold whipping a golf ball at a dude's head just because it would like get him out of the game? What?
Interesting.
I gotta put you in this.
Golf ball too.
Well, Snowball's right in that Chiefs game.
Yeah, yeah.
You should not fans.
Oh yeah, that.
Other than yelling. Should not have a physical impact on the game.
I agree.
Okay,
yeah, I agree. 100%.
They can have a mental impact or a verbal. They should not have a physical. Gold should not be allowed to like jump out of the stands and tackle a dude breaking away for a kick return touchdown.
I mean, if I tackled an NFL player, that would be impressive. that'd be very impressive. Well, Mike Tomlin. I mean, Mike Tomlin stuck his foot out in the middle of a kick return. Wasn't it a kick return or punt return many years ago? He got fined and suspended, if I remember right. Anyway, go ahead, Drew, and then we got a break. We're late.
Just go ahead and break. what I was going to say was not meaningful enough to the discussion. Just go ahead and break.
All right, fair enough. Up next, we'll talk with Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. I kind of want to ask him about this scenario that happened at the Yankees game as well. Plus, we'll talk some of the trades that went down next here on Cody and Gold. All right, back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here in about 15 minutes or so. We'll get back into some baseball a little bit on the other side of it. Not talking about the Yankees fans, but what Freddie Freeman continues to do for the LA Dodgers. But let's talk some NFL, although I want to get Ross Tucker's perspective on the fan interaction stuff as well. And we go out to the hotline and welcome in our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker, where our insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, always good to have you on the show, man. We'll get to NFL in a second. I just wanted to get your perspective on a potential fan interaction that maybe you had in your playing days after we were discussing the two idiots that tried to grab the glove or ball off of Mookie Betts last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people need to realize we get to the point, and this is going to sound bad, but I feel like every once in a while, we need the fans to be reminded that the guys that are down in that field, that they actually can come up into the field and they can do harm to you. I feel like people totally lose sight of this sometimes. Just the way I see fans treating players, treating coaches, treating officials, I just don't understand it. I mean, no matter how mad or upset or disappointed I would be with my favorite team, it would never rise to that level of thinking I should get that mad or get that involved. Even in that instance, the thing I didn't like about with the Yankees fans is they were like twisting his hand
and
the glove to try to rip the ball. What if Mookie Betts got injured? You know, like what if there was an issue there? I'm just not a fan of the fans getting involved in anyway. I'm trying to think, there was another situation recently. I can't remember exactly what it was, but made me think, man, that person's real lucky that whoever the player was or coach was involved didn't actually come over and do something.
Like, I mean, I imagine, Ross, sometimes, though, like any of us are human beings, it's got to be really difficult to try to ignore it. Like Tyreek Stevenson, right? We're going to talk about how he did not get to his job on time as a result of barking at the fans. But, man, I'll be honest. I'm sure sometimes it's hard to ignore. I don't know what they were saying. They could have been talking about his mom, his play. You know, like, who knows what they were bringing up to Tyreek Stevenson.
Yeah, so a couple things here. First of all, where he was on the field, he can't really hear what anybody's saying. He was just taunting them because the Bears were going to win, okay? And by the way, the irony of that is that if he just kept taunting the whole play, the Bears probably do win because he's the guy that went over and tipped the ball up in the air to Noah Brown. He's the one that had the bad play that caused the issue. So it's like the Bears are better off if it was 10 guys on the field and Stevenson just kept taunting the Commanders fans and didn't go over there because he ran over there, tipped it up right to Noah Brown. Unbelievable. But the other thing I would say about that, like to me, I remember sometimes I would initiate it. Like we played in 04. Was it the Buffalo Bills at the Raiders at the old Oakland Alameda Coliseum? And I heard so much about the black hole growing up and the black hole and the black hole. And I'm there and I'm like, you know what? This might be my only time ever playing in the black hole. So we ran out for pregame warmups, guys. And, of course, they make you warm up or whatever at the end where the black hole is. I went like 4 feet away from the black hole, like just far enough that they couldn't touch me. And I was like, is this it? Is this all you guys got? And they all started grabbing for me and yelling and they were trying to reach for me. I'm like, is this all you guys got? Like, I wanted the full experience. I wanted the full black hole experience.
We're talking to Ross Tucker here on Cody and Gold. Now, I want to get your perspective also as a player when you see a teammate say he's too tired to finish a play. I'm talking about Anthony Richardson, of course, after he admitted after their game that he was tired. He basically tapped himself out. And then since then, we now know that Joe Flacco is the starting quarterback. And Shane Steichen just clarified that Joe Flacco is the starting quarterback going forward. This is not a one-game experiment.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to say here, right? Let's start with Anthony Richardson taking himself out of the game for a play. First of all, let's start with just his conditioning being so bad that after one lengthy play where he scrambles or whatever, he needed to come out of the game, or he felt like he needed to come out of the game. I mean, Mahomes does that a decent amount. Have you ever seen Lamar Jackson play? I don't know how he plays the next snap sometimes. Or Kyler Murray? Those guys do that like 10 times a game. So, number one, I'd be very concerned that his conditioning is that poor that he felt like he needed to come out. Number two is that he actually did it. He actually did it. Not only his conditioning was that bad, he actually tapped his helmet and came out for a play, a third down in the third quarter in Texans territory. Because here's the thing, if you're the coach, how do you know he doesn't do it again? But my favorite part of it is that after the game, when he was asked about it, he didn't even realize, number one, that it was a bad thing to do, or number two, that he should lie about it. He's like, yeah, I was tired, so I just thought I need a rest for a play. Like, what? I've never heard of a quarterback doing that in the sport of football at any level in my entire life. And he had no clue. Like, he didn't get it. He just comes across, I guess, as a really sort of young, innocent, ignorant kid that just didn't realize what he had done. But if you're Steichen, you have to stand up in front of 100 people every day, right? The coaches, the players, the practice squad guys, the guys on IR, and they know who gives them the best chance to win. And they know you know who gives him the best chance to win. So it's a super bad look for Steichen to go with Richardson when everybody knows that Flacco gives him the best chance to win. And so he's making the right decision here, especially, you know, Richardson taking himself out for a play, that kind of gave Steichen the out to do this, which is probably what he wanted to do anyway, to get Flacco back in there. And I don't think it's like the end of the world. Flacco plays great. They make the playoffs. Awesome. Flacco plays like crap. Okay, put Richardson back in. Flacco plays okay, and they're in the mix. I guess keep them in until they're not in the mix anymore. It's, you know, you guys, Patrick Mahomes sat for a whole year. You know, guys like Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers have sat for 3 years. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if Anthony Richardson sits and watches what Flacco does for a while.
I think the only problem is you've got to be conscious and make those decisions early. The mistake these teams are making is everyone said Anthony Richardson was a project, and then they didn't treat him like that, Ross. Like, he's a project quarterback. Just go ahead and start there, kids. You're like, but that doesn't make sense. Should have sat him from the beginning. The second you bench him, you've waved the flag, in my opinion. You've told everyone in football you've given up on the kid. Like, it's never going to work in Indianapolis with Richardson. The only time I can remember, maybe, where a quarterback got benched for somebody else and it worked was Eli?
Yeah, I mean, so here's what I would say. When and who decides which quarterbacks are better off sitting and which quarterbacks need to play?
I mean, that's why the GMs get paid a lot of money, I guess. If the ownership gets involved, it's a problem, Ross.
No, but who decides that and based on what? Like, I hear these people saying, you know, Drake May really needs to sit and watch, but he started every game for North Carolina for 2 years.
Yeah.
Then they said, that's what they were saying earlier in the year, but they said Anthony Richardson, who started 10 games at Florida, he needs to play. Like, what are you? I'm thoroughly confused. So a guy that started every game for 2 years needs to sit and watch for a while because he's not ready. But a guy that only started 10 games, he needs to play? Shouldn't Drake May have been more ready than Anthony Richardson? And should Drake May have played before? Like, I don't understand any of the logic. People just make this stuff up. I'm convinced. Based on whatever the situation is with their team. What it really comes down to is if you have a good quarterback already, like Alex Smith, you say, you know, he'll be best served by watching. If you don't have a good quarterback, if your other quarterback stinks, you're like, he really needs to learn by playing. That's what it comes down to.
I think that's right. As we're talking to Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, we know the Chiefs are 7-0. Cody and I just got done going through a little bit of the past couple weeks, and I think on the surface, people probably don't realize it, but going back to Week 4 against the Chargers, the Chiefs have won every game by 7 or more points. Like, they're not winning, they're not barely winning these games. By NFL standards, you're winning by 7+. That's a pretty good margin.
Yeah, they're the best team, and they're going to be number one in the Ross Tucker Football Podcast Power Rankings.
Good.
Until they lose probably multiple games at this point, and they're still trying to get better, bringing in DeAndre Hopkins, bringing in Josh Uche. I love that Brett Veach and Andy Reid and Clark Hunt, to some extent, realize that they have a unique opportunity at football mortality. Right, like they already checked the dynasty box. Now they have a chance to check doing something that's never been done before box and being talked about forever all the time box, and they're going for it. And I love it, and they should. What's more thing can happen? You trade late round picks for Uche and Hopkins and you don't win the whole thing? Nobody's going to say it's bad. Nobody's going to be mad at you for doing that.
No. What did you think of DeAndre Hopkins in his first one, though? We were kind of impressed. I thought the way we viewed it, Ross, was that looked like a professional wide receiver, something that we hadn't seen a lot of this year after Rashee Rice went down.
Right. Well, that's exactly what he still is, right? He, you know, so much of the sport, I feel like, is football intelligence, like knowing what you're doing, having a feel for the game, and you can't have the success that Hopkins has had without having a terrific feel for the game like he does. And so, you know, even if he's not as explosive as maybe he used to be, although, you know what, it never felt to me like that's how he really won anyway. He always kind of won with his brains, with his body, and with his hands, as opposed to, like, being some super explosive guy.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Appreciate it, man. We'll check you next Wednesday.
Sounds great. See you guys.
There you go. Ross Tucker joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. Our insider call is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season.
Nice to have him be a national guy who's not like Mike Florio had the Lions as his number one team or whatever, right? He's like, well, they're the best team. They're number one in my Ross Tucker football power rankings because they're the best team. Talk to me if they get a couple of losses, and then maybe we'll look to make an adjustment here. But that's the right attitude. They are the best team. You don't have to overthink it in this scenario. As it sits right now, the Chiefs are the best team in football. We'll have a better idea of where they stand amongst their peers or who's close or not close. Do I think the Lions are pretty much neck and neck? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and I asked them, especially on the NFC side, like, I don't care if the Lions, people want to say they're the best team. That truly doesn't matter.
Best team in the AFC, that all that matters for the Chiefs until February.
Yeah, worry about that. When you play in the Super Bowl, you're going to play a team that's playing good football, and is a tall task, right? It's the NFL. Nobody's going to be, it's pretty rare that anybody's going to be a huge, huge favorite in a Super Bowl. So if you get on the NFC side, whether it was the Eagles or the 49ers or whatever, that team is also pretty darn good and playing good football. So I'm not really concerned about the Lions at this point in time. One thing, though, that we were talking about with Ross, it happened right before he hopped on with us, which was the news in Indianapolis yesterday during the show. It broke that Anthony Richardson was not going to start this upcoming week. But Shane Steichen made it clear that this is not an experiment, that Joe Flacco is our starting quarterback now, unless it just falls apart and they're out of contention, then maybe they go back to Richardson. But we said it yesterday, Joe Flacco, of course, gives him a better chance to win right now. I just think it's a weird spot because you get to the playoffs, okay, you win a game or you don't win a game. Joe Flacco's obviously not the answer long term. So do you think you can actually go back to Anthony Richardson? I think Shane Steichen had to do it because guys in the locker room saw their quarterback not playing at a high level, number one, and then number two, acknowledging that he was tired and he was kind of quitting on his team for a play. So that's why you had to make the change. You heard Ross say that he thinks that was just kind of the last straw, or the exit ramp that allowed him to make the change. But Anthony Richardson was not playing good football. The Colts are 4-4. They have a chance to be in the playoffs. I think a decent chance to be a wild card team. They have talent. I like the Colts coming into the season. We did our playoff predictions. I got plenty of things wrong. Colts were one of the teams I had getting in. Like I think they have talent. I thought Anthony Richardson was going to play a hell of a lot better. But with Joe Flacco, their chance of making the playoffs went way up.
Richardson's problem at this point is stuck between two worlds, what he just said, which is came into college, essentially. He had started like 10 games, right, in his last like 2 years of college or whatever, 20 games. So he'd started 20 total college games. He's now only played 10 NFL games. So he's going to go 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024, having played a total of 30 football games, if he doesn't get in. No wonder he's not good, or can't read a defense, or can't figure where to go. Man, he's played 30 games in 4 years. You're not going to get by playing less than 10 games a year in 4 years, 20 in college. You know, like, it's just not going to serve you anywhere. What? And those 8 games he played in college, he wasn't a starter. He just kind of came in and that stuff, right? Like, the starter's got like 25 games as a quarterback between 2022 and now. 3 years? Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's probably, that's it for Anthony Richardson. He's going to go sign with some other team who will put him in a competition with some veteran quarterback named Andy Dalton, Andy Flacco, whatever, and he'll lose to that guy in a training camp next season for the team who didn't draft the quarterback they want, for the Raiders. And either he'll win the job or he won't, but it just feels like they've made their decision.
I just think, because to your point, Cody, he had very little, you know, rep count. He basically started at 20 games essentially in college. His stats weren't that good. Like, it's not like he, I know Bo Nix is not considered to be a great quarterback, but it's not like he was Bo Nix and he was throwing for 50 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. He had 17 touchdowns and 10 picks his senior year in college. Yeah. From the jump, like you said, the entire thing was he's supposed to be a project. He's supposed to be the guy that is brought in and is the backup for a year or two even.
But you've now burned 2 years, correct, essentially, and he's learned nothing.
Yeah, you haven't Yeah, the Colts have fumbled this one really bad.
Joe Flacco, meanwhile, has actually played good in these games this year. He's 7 touchdowns, 1 interception. If we're just looking at touchdown-interception ratio.
He's played great the last year and a half.
700 yards. We all know he was the comeback player of the year last year for the Browns. Got that team in the postseason. And when he had 13 touchdowns, 8 picks, and 1,600 yards. So it's the right decision to get them to win now. It's just long-term, you're a mess. Once again, Chris Ballard, who obviously has ties to Kansas City as a GM, in another tough spot with the quarterback. They haven't been able to find, post Andrew Luck, it has been a challenge to find the quarterback. They've tried the Matt Ryan route, the Carson Wentz route.
If you remember, he famously said, "What, I'm just supposed to draft a quarterback in the draft? If I get it wrong, you're all going to want my head on a spike anyway." Bad news, Chris. Bad news.
There is not a single person in Indiana sports that is more in the doghouse than Chris Ballard. And it's been that way for a couple years now.
I think any GM would look stupid if they don't have a quarterback at all. But that's pretty much the only job. If you screw up every other part of the job, you'll stay employed for a while.
But if they make the playoffs, guys, with Joe Flacco, which I really think they're going to be a wild card team. If they do that in that division and they're already 500, and look at the rest of the other teams that are floating around the 6 and 7 spot. I mean, it's the Broncos, it's the Chargers, the Colts. If Flacco is the quarterback, I don't think they're any worse than either of those teams. No. I'll tell you that. And so if they get in like Chris Ballard or Shane Steichen, job security wise, getting in the postseason, usually not always. If you're in Dallas or otherwise, you can get fired. In Indianapolis, if you make the playoffs, they're probably not firing you, and they're certainly not firing Steichen anyway. But
the only reason I think Ballard might go is because before they got in, it took a while for them to get Anthony Richardson because they were doing exactly what they're going to do now with Joe Flacco. They brought in Matt Ryan and they brought in Phillip Rivers, and they were good enough to make the playoffs, but they were never good enough to win the whole thing. They were in quarterback hell. And they finally got bad enough to get a quarterback that was good, supposed to be good in the draft, and it hasn't worked out. And now they're back again to the, well, we're good enough to make the playoffs, but I don't know if anybody right now would say, yeah, the Colts are in the conversation. I mean,
But it does imply a lot of parts of the system are working. They're just unable to do the thing a lot of teams are unable to do.
From the 913, someone said, why is there not a discussion of Flacco training Richardson like Alex Smith training Mahomes? Remember, Anthony Richardson started the season, though. That'd be like Mahomes' rookie year starting. And this is the second year for Richardson.
And then Alex supposed to be coaching
him. Yeah, like Anthony Richardson, they were willing to start him last year. He started the season as a rookie last year. Then he got hurt. He comes back this year, he starts, and then he hasn't played well, and he gets benched. So it's just not the same. Personally, I don't think it's the same scenario because it's not like they went to Mahomes, and then they benched him, and then said, oh, you need to learn some more, and then we'll bring you back. They're hoping that Anthony Richardson, even if you want to view it in that way, that he's going to sit the rest of the year now behind Flacco after already playing, 10 games or something? I don't believe it's the same at all.
If I remember right, Joe Flacco came in and I think from the jump said, I'm not here to babysit anybody. Like he from the jump was like, I'm not here. Like Joe Flacco
said,
he said, I'm not showing him the ropes at all. Essentially is kind of the way that it came out of Joe Flacco's mouth is look, he's on his own to figure it out. I'm not going to take any extra time. He was pulled a Brett Favre card. Basically it's not my job to help this guy.
Look, Alex Smith knew what the gig was. He was just more willing to work on a guy. He was actually really complimentary to Patrick's play this season, which we can get to in 11.
Yeah, he's playing great football, he said.
He was incredibly complimentary of what he had seen so far. It's just a weird situation.
Up next, though, let's get to one thing that has stood out about Patrick Mahomes, what he's kind of dealing with this offense. Then we'll get into something that I thought we were done with, but there was a recent article nationally talking about Andy Reid and his future in Kansas City. And it wasn't from Mike Florio. That's next.